Welcome to the Exec MBA podcast. I'm your host, Brett Twitty, and you are listening to a new episode. On this episode of the podcast, I'm excited to share my recent conversation with Annette Stock and Alex Morita. Annette and Alex are first-year students in our Executive MBA class of 2023, and over these past few months, they've been serving as section representatives for their class. I recently connected with Annette and Alex via Zoom, talk about how things are going in their first year, how they decided to serve as section reps, what that experience has been like, and so much more. I think you're really going to enjoy this conversation. So without further ado, here is my interview with Annette Stock and Alex Morita. Alex, Annette, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Brett.
Hey, Brett. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, it's great to see you here. Our listeners don't know this, but we just had like a 10-minute long conversation about emo before we started this podcast. I am sure they're so disappointed to hear that they missed out on that. But unfortunately, I think we're not going to be able to talk about emo here, at least at this time. We might have you back, though.
I'll do a review on the My Chemical Romance tour on the next podcast for all those that are interested.
Excellent. Well, how are y'all doing? Alex, I will say, again, our listeners, things that they might not necessarily pick up on because this is audio only. Your shirt that you're wearing here has like a real strong Friday vibe. Like I feel a lot better that I'm here now with you. Like things are feeling lighter. It's warm. It's 62 degrees outside. Like it's that West Coast energy.
I was going to say, I have the blessing of being in a very nice 70 degree sunny day in California today. So I'm wearing my light tie-dyed blue shirt that I'll go probably take a walk on the Strand later with my dogs and just enjoy the sunlight while I can.
And Annette, how are you doing?
I mean, I'm doing great. That's a rough comparison. How's Alex? He's just perfect. How are you, Annette? I guess I'm also good. Thanks, Alex. Hey, it's sunny here too in DuPont Circle in Washington, D.C., so no complaints. I do have a sweatshirt on, though, not a t-shirt.
I believe that might be a Virginia sweatshirt. Is that
right?
Yeah,
yeah.
Okay.
Gotta represent.
All right. We are recording this on the Friday after the men's basketball team lost to the University of North Carolina in the ACC tournament. But you know what? School spirit. Not dependent upon the outcome of a single basketball game.
No way, not at all.
Well,
mucho wahoo, as I always say.
Oh wow. Okay. All right. Well, it's great having you here. Our listeners are probably picking up on this energy that like y'all seem to spend a lot of time together, seem to know each other well. surprise, surprise, they are two of the leaders currently for our executive MBA class of 2023. So Alex and Annette work closely together and so excited to have y'all here to talk a little bit more about what you've been up to with your class over these past few months. Before we get there, want to start by having you share a little bit more about who you are and your background with our listeners. So Annette, can I come to you first? Would you tell us a little bit more about you?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm from Vermont originally and went to college in upstate New York. And then when I graduated college, I did Teach for America, which was like a pretty big pivotal decision for me. My classroom was a kindergarten, first grade, second grade, children with special needs classroom in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn. And the experience really made me decide to not apply to law school, which was my 21-year-old plan. And I decided to stay in the classroom. So I really had a variety of educational leadership experiences since then. And I've decided to stay in the world of education. And now, here I am. I'm actually still teaching right now at a private school in DC.
How did you decide to do Teach for America? Was that a big decision? Is it something that you always knew you wanted to do? Was it more of like, I'll try this out for 2 years? I'm curious.
That's such a great question, Brett. I actually had this class called The Politics of Poverty and Welfare, my senior year of college. And I was a political science major. And I took the class and it just really opened my eyes to, some of the economic inequalities in America. Again, at 20, you haven't gotten out much yet. I just went from school to more school, hadn't really been in the real world. And I really thought to myself, like, wow, like there's a lot of problems, inequality. Gosh, I wonder if there's any solutions to this. And I said this to my political science advisor, and he was like, I think there's another class you would really like. It's called Higher Education in America. And it explored, you know, education. And through that, I really got to hear how education can make such a big difference. And it can really be a game changer towards moving classes, and not classes like college classes, but, you know, class structures like, you know, lower class, middle class, upper class society, and how education can really be the great equalizer in a lot of ways if students have access to it. And I was just so excited and delighted to hear a solution to a really big problem, which is how do we solve, you know, wealth inequality and give folks a chance. And then my advisor also was like, hey, there's this program called Teach for America. You know, you should look into it and see what you think. And sort of the rest is history.
And I imagine going from Vermont, upstate New York, Bed-Stuy,
that sounds like
quite a progression.
Yeah, no. So I actually, again, I had only done, you know, Vermont, upstate New York, and you get this application. And when you're applying, you not only, it's like you get to put preferences and you get to do a rank of like which cities you want to go to, what grade you'd want to teach. Like they do try to give you some preference. So at the very top preference, I actually put South Dakota and a couple other rural locations because I thought, well, I'm a little afraid of cities. This is going to be a safe bet. You know, if I get placed there, I'll feel comfortable. And I put high school because, you know, I was like, okay, high school, I think I could teach that. And then I put like political science. Well, at the very bottom of the application, you can check this box. And the box says, you know, if there's a location in America that is underserved and no one signed up for it, and it's a really high need place, would you consider maybe thinking about being placed there and wiping the slate clean of all of your other preferences? And again, 20-year-old was like, sure, why the heck not? So I checked the box, you know, wait a few months, and I get the letter. I'm really excited. I open it. I'm like, oh my God, I got into Teach for America. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm in inner city Bed-Stuy, New York City. And it was like, very scary. I had never been on a subway, never been on a bus before. But you know, it was such a great experience. And to be honest, like I fell in love with New York City and I've been living in cities ever since. So it kind of opened that door that I don't know if I would have knocked on if life hadn't just unfolded in that way.
Well, I appreciate that story, and it feels very real. You know, if you haven't really spent much time in a city, you haven't really had to negotiate that on a daily basis, particularly like we're not just talking about any kind of metro area. I'm from Charlotte originally. That's a city of about 1 million people. It's a big difference between Charlotte and New York City. Like New York City is this thing that like lives on, like it's globally known, like it's a massive city, lots happening. Has an outsized reputation. I can understand why that might feel a little overwhelming if you had had in your mind being a political science teacher in rural South Dakota. That's a very different thing working with high school students. So Alex, I'm gonna come to you next. Tell us a little bit more about you and your background.
Yeah, of course. So I came to Darden via Pennsylvania, basically. I was born and raised in Pennsylvania. Did an IT undergrad at a very small state school just outside of Pittsburgh. And then very quickly through all of my programming classes, I realized software engineering probably wasn't going to be the life for me. And then luckily I got into this class senior year that actually had to do with project management from a software engineering background. And it introduced me into consulting. So we actually ended up getting like a real client that was just local to the town. They wanted to implement like a new accounting system, and they wanted to implement a new website because they didn't feel like they were getting a lot of traction on their website. So it was the first time we actually like really got to apply knowledge to a business case, which set the groundwork for Darden later in the future. So we, you know, had a full meeting with them, requirements gathering session, met as a team, built a website out, created like a basically like a project plan and all this stuff. By the end of that course, there was five groups in that class. My team won. We won a $20 gift card to the local brewery. So of course, senior year, Alex has no money. I'm super excited to have for a $20 gift card to the local brewery. And then I started my first job right outside of Pittsburgh as a database administrator, because it was the first job I could get. And I very, very quickly realized, I was like, yeah, I need to somehow break into consulting. And I applied to a bunch of jobs in DC, and I ended up at, the company no longer exists, but Computer Sciences Corporation. So I left my first college job after like 6 months, which everyone says, oh, you should always stick out college, your first college job a year. And I was like, I'm not following that rule. I'm getting out of here. I'm going to switch. So I switched, and it was completely for the better. The first project I actually worked on was the World Trade Center Health Program, which ran the health program for basically all the victims of 9/11, their families, and like all the firefighters, police that got sick from working in the dig zone and everything. So that was the very first project. So obviously, like, really intense work, really almost sometimes heartbreaking, just seeing people getting sick over time. But my team was also instrumental in providing a lot of the data for getting the program reauthorized when it came up for reauthorization. Not that it should ever be questioned if it should be reauthorized or not. But yeah, that was my first project. And I was like, whoa, this is the type of impact I can have in, from consulting for the government, which led to a 7-year career with them in consulting from different companies. But I left government consulting with Booz Allen in 2020, roughly. And then I decided to uproot my life. I had a house in Maryland, very close to DC. Decided to uproot my life and move to California on a whim for another job opportunity, exploring the commercial space. And I've loved it ever since. And really, I think what it really comes down to is, so both my parents are immigrants to this country. My father's Guatemalan, my mother's Colombian. And they always told me growing up, through everything, was like, hey, you can do anything you set your mind to. So I did this undergrad, and I was like, whatever, like, I'll find something I'm good at. Got into consulting, and I was like, yeah, this is fun. This is cool. Like, I get to help people. And then when I thought my life was like pretty established, me and my wife got married. We were like, oh yeah, we'll start thinking about kids. And I was like, you know what? I actually want to think about school again for fun. She's like, for fun? What are we doing here? What do you mean for fun? And Darden has been a awesome choice. And then I decided, hey, even after getting into a really good program, let's take this a step further and let's just move across the country and just like try something new. And my parents always say I'm crazy. I was the crazy child because my brother has always been very successful too, but he's been the homebody. And then there was me and my wife who decided, hey, we're going to move to DC. We're going to move to California now. We'll see you guys when we come around again. So yeah, I mean, realistically, I just like appreciate kind of my parents are always giving me that adventure bug. So now I get to, like I said, take walks on the beach after class, because while everyone else is finishing class up at night, I'm just finishing midday.
Yeah, those distance sessions, civilized 4 to 5:30, we wrap up at 5:30 and let's go to the beach. Why not? You still got a few more daylight hours.
Yeah, you get to watch. I say the California taxes just pay for the pretty sunsets. That's what I say.
That's one way to look at it. It's a very glass half full approach, Alex. Appreciate that. So, how long had y'all respectively thought about pursuing an MBA? Alex, is it something that you always knew you wanted to do? It sounds like, though, that you came to a point you were like, you know what? I actually think I want to do this for fun, which I don't know if we've heard that kind of word used on this podcast around the decision to pursue an MBA, which is great to hear.
So I will say I have another master's degree. I have a master's degree in cybersecurity, which I did because I was just so interested in cyber in general. One thing about me is I just really enjoy learning. So I think the for fun part was always going to be in the back of my mind when applying to any school. As long as I think the material and the program is both, obviously really rewarding, but also fun for me. I didn't want to get into a program that was just, it was just curriculum and that was the end of it. I didn't want to just be spoken to every day or lectured to. So that's we can get into like why I chose Darden a little bit later. But yeah, I mean, like, I think that it comes to a point in most consultants' life that someone always says, have you considered an MBA? And a lot of like the partners at firms obviously have MBAs too. So you're like, oh, okay. Like, so that's always lived in the back of my mind too. So I think from the time I hit consulting in 2015, roughly, I was always like, one day I'll look at it. And then I met a couple of my really good friends who all had MBAs. They all have successful consulting careers. And I was like, okay, I'll sincerely consider it later in my career. And then I was, it was summer of 2019. I think it was 2019. No, 2020. And I decided, no, I'm going to do this for real. And my wife is like, you want to go to school again? You just did a master's degree that you just graduated from 2 months ago in cybersecurity. And I said, yeah, I think it'll be fun. And she's, and kind of the same thing you said, Brett, it'll be fun. It's going to be fun. And I said, I think it's going to be fun. So I started doing a bunch of research and I ended up at Darden, which was honestly one of my first schools I even started looking into when I looked at MBAs.
Well, that's great. And we say it all the time here on the podcast. It's not uncommon for people to have a prior master's or graduate degree before coming to Darden. About a third of each executive MBA class has already completed an advanced degree and is coming back for something, I think, a little bit different than what they've done before. It's got, obviously, the MBA has more breadth to it. It's more general in orientation. Typically, the prior master's degree was similar to your degree, perhaps a bit more specialized in that way. So, Annette, how about you? Had you thought about an MBA for a while?
Well, like Alex, I actually already have a master's as well. I have a master's in education, which makes sense given my past, life path. Doing Teach for America, you pretty much, like, while you're teaching, you can get a master's on the weekend. So I had actually, in a prior, lifetime, have done the, like, working and getting a master's. So I kind of had that under my belt from a while ago. But yeah, actually, in terms of an MBA, no one ever suggested it to me at work, kind of in the same way that Alex is describing. Mine is actually way more in a, I would say, friendly suggestion way. Actually, he would be so shocked that I would be saying his name on this podcast, but I lived in California for a little while. And, I had a roommate and his name was Alex Jorian. We met purely through Craigslist, like trying to find a roommate and all that. And it was one of those situations where you just meet someone in person and you just click. So I lived in West Hollywood, California for a little while. And Alex was an executive MBA student and he was working full time. He's an engineer. And so I would get to hear about what it was like. And he kept saying to me, like, Annette, I think you'd actually really love this. And I was like, no, I'm in education. But this kept happening over the years. Like, we would be talking and he'd be like, did you ever think about applying? And I was like, no, not yet. And then other friends in my life that were getting MBAs, I'd ask them about it and they would say, oh yeah, we did this case. By the way, Annette, I actually think you would really like getting an MBA. So that kept happening. And I kept almost getting invited to apply by like multiple people in my life in multiple stages. And finally, it just got to a point where I was like, okay. Like, all these people I respect think that it would be really meaningful. I'll at least like learn more about it. And kind of the rest is history, because the more I learned about it, I was like, oh my God, you guys are totally right. Like, this actually, I do think this would make a lot of sense for me.
The cosmos can only speak to you so many times before you have to listen.
Exactly.
I like that. Yeah, absolutely. So how did you arrive at the decision of an executive MBA in Darden specifically? I mean, this decision to work while pursuing your MBA, what led you to say, I think that's the right path? Annette?
Again, Brett, great question. It's funny. I mean, I hate to be almost glib about it, but Darden was a really easy choice because for me, the most important part was the people and the community. And, you know, living in Washington, D.C., you know, I obviously, you know, I have a lot of friends. I've met a lot of people through professional contacts. And it's funny, every person I met that had gotten their MBA that went to Darden was super nice and really smart and really kind and really giving of their time. And so at first I was like, well, you know, maybe it's just like random selection. It's just the people that I know. So I started calling and reaching out to people on LinkedIn that had gone to Darden. And I started asking them like, hey, do you have like a few minutes? I like, you know, have, I'm thinking of applying. Do you have a few seconds? And every single one of them, every single time was like, how does tomorrow look? Or maybe like at the longest the next day, but there was such a genuine interest in talking about the program and like steering me in the right direction. And I really started to realize like, you know, the most important thing for me is like a healthy, happy, good community. And this just seems to check all the boxes. And I just got such a great energy about it. And then as soon as I enrolled and like walked around and started meeting people, I was like, wow, like 100%, there are no jerks. Like everyone here is just so kind. And so I felt like not only it was the alumni that I was meeting and already knew, but the people I didn't know. And then it was kind of confirmed once I walked onto campus. But yeah, I wanted to immerse myself not only in a good MBA program, but you know, you're going to spend a lot of time with these folks. And you know, that piece was really important to me to be around good people too, not just ambitious people.
I appreciate that point, Annette. I think it's something as an admissions committee, we think about a lot. I think in terms of the way that we think about it, we ask questions around what kind of teammate are you going to be? How are you going to show up for your classmates? Both in class and out of class. And we think a lot about that interpersonal dynamic because it's such a big part of the Darden experience, right? This isn't just coming to class, to Alex's point. This is not just coming to class and like motoring through the curriculum and then all of a sudden you're done. Like there's discussions, you're going to talk about real things. We've had members of recent classes on here talking about all the stuff in the world going on while they were in the program and how much that came into the classroom. You got to know that you're around good people who are eager to have these conversations and, you know, they have the right kind of intentions towards the experience. They want to get to know each other and invest in the relationships. These are things that we spend a lot of time thinking about as an admissions committee. Alex, you mentioned that Darden was one of the first schools you kind of looked at it. It kind of hung on your radar. What ultimately led you to say, hey, you know, this is the right place and, you know, I want to work while doing this?
Yeah, of course. So I did the... When I was looking at schools in general, I think I was just 28 and like a half years old, which I know is a little early in the executive programs, and kind of like in the middle-ish for the residential program. So, right away I kind of decided, I'm like, okay, what would a full-time program look like for me? And what would an executive program look like for me? And I started weighing some of the differences. I actually went to some of the Darden full-time events early on. And as I was doing the executive events, and then there was I can't remember who talked about this, but they talked about the switching, the climbing and the entrepreneurial aspect, which Darden does a really good job with the executive coaches of Jim and Kellogg. Once you're here, really breaking that down for you. But it had been the first time I heard about it. And so when I was considering like, all right, what am I? Am I a switcher? Am I a climber? Or what say you? I knew I wasn't going to switch per se into a completely different career, which was I wasn't going to go and become like an investment banker, which I felt like was really good for like the full-time program, because full-time programs that get the ability to do the internships and really get exposure to different industries from that perspective. With me, I knew I wanted to keep a career around tech. So if it was consulting or if it was going into a more like product management oriented role or program management oriented role in some tech company, I knew that that was going to be more important for me. So what I wanted to do instead was take my current career growth and my current career trajectory and pair it with education, just like you would kind of do at work anyway. Like you go and get certifications or you go and do specific training programs. I felt like this was going to streamline really what I wanted to do in my career. So that's why I really started moving towards the executive route. And then at the end of the day, when I started meeting a bunch of these people, like kind of Annette mentioned, like there's obviously the no jerk portion. Like that was really important for me. The community was really important for me. But as I started meeting a lot of these folks that were also applying to the program, I realized like, oh man, these people are super successful in what they do. I mean, some of our classmates, it's ridiculous what they actually do. But you get this like intense network of these, like some people are executives and some people are on their way to being executives. And there's people like me who I'm like, I'm just trying to break into that role. And so many of these people are living and breathing it that they can give you guidance into that. And I was like, okay, yeah, this is where I belong. I forget what the adage is. It's like in a group of people, you all become the average of each other. And when I'm sitting in our classrooms and our cohorts, I'm like, I can definitely feel myself just growing just by like the comments made in class, just like by like introducing a different viewpoint that I hadn't thought of on a case or even in a video. I'm like, oh, I didn't think about it that way. And it really just like broadens the horizon in my own head.
Well, it's interesting to hear you make that point, Alex. And I want to stay with this for just a second, because that is something that we hear from a lot of students, right? You come up in a certain kind of background, people who do kind of the same sort of things, working on similar projects. And now you're in a room full of people who have different backgrounds, different experiences, different life experiences, just a different way of viewing the world oftentimes. And that comes into the class. Like, sounds like that's been your experience.
Yeah, there's actually a really good example. I'm going to call out a classmate of ours, Joshua Blecky. He's an architect. And we were doing a case on the rebuilding of the subways under the World Trade Center after 9/11. And from my perspective, I read the case and I was like, oh man, this is crazy. Like, to try and do this as fast as they did and as with as many contractors and subcontractors as they did. The one thing that was very interesting to me is the design build process. For me, my brain didn't work like that. I'm like, how can you design what things like a building or subway tunnels or all these things that are like protecting life and transferring people from place to place while also like working on it at the same time. And Josh, being from that field, explained it in a way that made more sense to the class. So it really, like, you saw a lot of like the wheels start turning, like, oh, we definitely didn't think of it that way. We thought of it a certain way where it wouldn't have worked. Like in our minds, that doesn't work. There's no way we can do that. But the way Josh was able to break it down from an architectural perspective, it was like totally understandable from that point. We're like, oh, okay, like that works. Okay, makes more sense now.
And Annette, has that been part of your experience too? I know you and Alex obviously in the same class generally, but have you found that the program has helped you kind of get out of, you know, just this is the way I see things and be exposed to different perspectives and insights?
Oh, definitely. You know, especially coming from the more nonprofit world and, you know, coming to business school and getting to meet with folks who are in all these different industries, all these different companies, a really big part for me, and this is a little humbling to admit, but it's true. You know, at the beginning, you know, we would be talking about cases where there's a factory where things are being made and the logistics, and I had to remember like, oh, business, like factories, you know, it's so outside of my day-to-day, which in the past was schools and like building schools and founding schools. And it's a different logistics. You're not worried about the timeline of making things and like how much that's going to cost. So, you know, there's that whole new world that opened up. And then not only to have that, but you know, we had a class where we had 2 minutes to write an executive email to clients about a project. And I mean, I did my best. I don't think I wrote the worst email in the world, but you know, I did what I could. The person that I wrote to wrote me back the most beautiful, eloquent email. It was like 2 full paragraphs. And it was so inspiring. I almost forgot I was in business school and I was like, yes, we will do this. Like it was so awesome because the person that wrote it is like a legit professional, like in that industry and an executive. So you talk about being around folks that really know their stuff. You know, it went from just like this classroom experience to so real world. And, you know, she and I talked about it after class and I was like, that was unbelievable. And so it's so cool. You get to meet your classmates and see all of their strengths at different times and in different ways and modeled in different ways, you know, not just about the stories they tell, but in the actionable classroom material as well.
That's awesome. I appreciate you sharing both. You're both sharing those experiences. I think our, you know, our prospective student listeners, we've been able to do mock classes, like virtual classes for folks, and we have not been able to do class visits. Our hope is we can bring these back, because I think just being in the room with students and realizing, like, one, how much fun y'all have in class. I think sometimes people think of business school and they think of like a really grim environment where everybody's very serious, you know, looking at spreadsheets. And I say this as somebody who's been like around for the weekend residencies. That is not my impression of what class is like at all. There's a lot of laughing going on there. Would you agree?
100%.
I was on mute. Yes.
100%. Yeah, I would say like we just have some classmates that really do a great job of bringing some good laughter to their classes. There's people like Cannon. I think Cannon cracks me up every time he opens his mouth, but also he follows up with such like well thought out ideas too, to responses to professors. And professors, we really do a good job of vibing off of each other. Even with quant heavy like classes like finance, Professor Ting was just hilarious in his own sense. And he even brought in some Schitt's Creek references into class. And I'm like, oh man, I mean, like, anyone that references Schitt's Creek in the middle of class and applying it to the curriculum we're learning is okay in my book, honestly.
I appreciate that. That is a very timely reference. And I really love, this summer we had some finance review sessions that Ting hosted for your class. Very strong musical soundtrack for those finance review classes. That meant a lot to me as the tech support for these classes. Doo-wop. I never would have guessed it, but sounds awful nice on a Saturday morning. So yes, so your finance faculty members, you know, they enjoy having fun in class too. It's an important thing to keep in mind. So y'all's class at quarter four, y'all in quarter four now? Am I doing the math right?
Yeah, we just started.
Just started. Okay, got a weekend residency coming up, not too distant future. We are recording this in early-ish March, so... So tell me what classes are you taking right now?
So we do have a little bit of choice this time. And Alex and I, by the way, have never been in class together. Like, just the way that it's worked with the A-B switch. And we also, like, did not talk about it, but we chose different electives. So, like, someday I hope to be in class with Alex. I think that'd be so much fun. But I have defining moments. And you have project management, right? Yeah.
Yep, that's correct.
And then operations.
And global global economics and markets too. So there's core classes for those listening. We have core classes that we all do together. And then quarter four is the first time we're offered an elective. And so that's where Annette and I differ, where she was in defining moments and I'm in PM. And there's actually another elective as well offered, Transforming Societies, which there's a bunch of our classmates in that as well.
That's awesome. Well, I should say, speaking specifically about the project management class, I think Yael is leading that class.
Yep. This is the first time we've got to experience Yael. Actually, we had one DA class in quarter one. Professor Carraway had to take a step away, and so Yael filled in. But this is the first time we're getting Yael as a professor, and no surprise, she is as energetic and excited about Darden as she is when she's just speaking about Darden to folks at a normal like pre-matriculation event to when we're just talking to her about life.
That is no surprise for our listeners who are not familiar with this lady who goes by one name, Yael. She is our fearless leader in the professional degree programs that includes executive MBA, part-time, and MSBA here at Darden School. So she teaches full-time residential students, as well as executive MBA students. And man, is she busy. You follow her on LinkedIn. I think within the past week, if I'm summarizing her travels, she was in Park City, Utah. She was at MIT's like sports data conference. She was back in Charlottesville. She's now in Sweden with a bunch of residential students on a global elective. So, and she even found time to join us for our part-time MBA town hall on Wednesday night. So also a big Tears for Fears fan. Did not know that until the town hall. So just going to include that. We started off by talking about a little emo. Why not? Why not continue with the music theme? So want to transition. It's funny to hear you say, Annette, that you and Alex have never had class together, because as our listeners have likely picked up from the very beginning of this podcast, y'all have a real, you know, esprit de corps. Y'all clearly know each other. You spent some time together, worked together, and you are also leaders for your class. So share a little bit more, and Alex, I'll come to you first. Like, what led you to say, I not only want to be an executive MBA student at Darden and all that that entails, but I actually want to add an extracurricular obligation. I'd like to be a representative for my class.
Being a section rep leader or a class rep, we call, so our just so the listeners understand, they our cohort is separated into two because you couldn't possibly have 140 people in front of one professor and get what you want out of it. So we're separated into two, 70 and 70. And then we volunteer and then you get elected. So that's where Annette and I are end up in different classes because we were in different sections in the very beginning. For me, I think I've always just been opinionated on how life is. And I figured I've had a lot of leadership positions in my past life, you know, going through college, going into normal work. When I was at Booz Allen, I was the lead of the Rising Leaders Forum, specifically focused on, there was a subset group specifically focused on all the new hires coming in. So I would put on new events for the new hires, have networking events, bring in speaking panels, and then also helped around a lot of the DEI initiatives there. And then once outside of work, I also played rugby for what we call the Washington Renegades. It's the first gay rugby team in North America. And I was a co-captain of that team for a year before I came to Darden too. So I think like leadership has just always been something I've been interested in. So once I got here and there was this opportunity to join a leadership position in our first year to help enact change for the program overall, and then take in feedback from our classmates and talk to the program team and talk to what we can do through it, I think it was almost a no-brainer for me. I'm like, yeah, this is exactly kind of what I want to do. And it's really piqued my interest in higher education. So I'm even speaking to Yael now about how do we like edit curriculum, or how do we add new electives to the curriculum for those that are like interested in maybe more tech heavy focused classes, or for those who might be interested in something else.
Annette, how about you? What led you to say, you know what, I'd like to be a section representative?
That was honestly really fun, because I hadn't heard, like Alex and I haven't sat down and talked about that too much, again, because we're in different sections, A and B. That was actually like really nice. It was kind of, I haven't gotten to hear, because we worked together for a while now, but it's been a while since we like first met. So that was nice. I think what gives me a lot of genuine joy in life, and what makes me really happy, and it's just how I am, is like serving and giving to others and really trying to find ways to make life better for people. And that, again, like it makes me really happy. And so I didn't know that there was like a section rep role. I think that I probably would have just wanted to organize things and do stuff anyway for our classmates, really, even if there wasn't like a position where you would be doing so. But, you know, I did hear about the rep role. And for me, I mean, I really love people. It was like a great way to not just help out, but also not just help out with the classmates, but also I thought it'd be cool to have dialogue and get to know some of the executive team better. Again, like it makes me really happy. And so it just seemed like a good fit. And I even kind of told my classmates, you know, listen, like, there's a lot of choices. Like, there's a lot of folks. Like, I think everyone in this MBA program would do great. But I'd be honored to. And, you know, if you'll have me, I'd be happy to have that position and just sort of unfolded in that way. And it's been so delightful. Like, I've really, really loved it.
It's been really nice too. Like, between Annette and I, people come to us with all types of, you know, issues, family issues or, you know, personal issues or academic issues or whatever it is. And they really do trust us to kind of be their voice to the program team and provide some type of feedback loop, you know, shout out to Lily for feedback loops for that. But realistically, it's just like this. I think the servantship is actually, and that's right, it's probably the best part of being a section rep. It's just doing something for our group that does a lot for us already. And it's our way of giving back.
Yeah, honestly, it's, you know, as you were talking, I was also just kind of thinking about what you were saying. And like, yeah, it's like, it's a pretty big honor that like our classmates would trust us with that.
Well, I think about all the ways that students have impacted this program over my time here, been here at Darden for 7.5 years. I feel like a lot of the program innovations, some of our best ideas, like the genesis, the kernel of those ideas, student feedback. And people always ask me on the phone, like, what's one thing you would change about the program if you could? This is a common question. And it's so funny, all the things I used to have like running on a list, like students were like, hey, what about this thing? And then it changed. And I'm like running out of things on this list, by the way. So the last good example that I can think of, and a shout out to our class of 2021 for this, the focus areas for students that were introduced with that class, an opportunity for students, if they were interested in demonstrating that they had earned a focus area, they had an interest in a particular topic, there's 7 of them, they really kind of factor in during the elective period. But we had the feedback from students that they were kind of interested in specializations, concentrations. In Darden world, something like a concentration would take 6 classes, and that felt like a lot for executive MBA students who were taking 12 electives. And so the students worked with the program team, worked with the faculty and staff, and admissions and career were also part of this conversation to kind of develop these focus areas. And the focus area requires 3 classes to earn it. And I share that as an example of how students have had a direct impact on what we are doing. And there's many other things. That's just the most recent example I can think of. So when you look back on the past few months, and granted, you know, you started in August, here we are in March, it's a relatively short runway. What are some of the things that stand out as, gosh, we're really proud that we could help with this or do this or share this feedback? Alex, anything that immediately comes to mind?
Right away comes to LR1, Leadership Residency 1. So it's a week long on campus in Charlottesville, not at Sands Family Ground residency. It's the first time we interact as a class, all 140 of us, and it's full days of curriculum. So there's a lot of prep that comes up to it, right? There's, you know, I won't lie, there's a lot of reading, a lot of cases, a lot of getting used to what the case method will be. But the program team does such a phenomenal job of mixing up the classes, setting us into breakout rooms, designing some exercises that kind of help break down those like stranger barriers that I call them. I had this really good conversation with Barb Millar after one of our sessions. I'm like, do you guys design some of these sessions for us to be like a lot more vulnerable with like almost complete strangers in some situations? And she's like, oh yeah, you know, sometimes that those conversations do come up. Like we try to make you guys get as close as we can as possible and as quick as we can, because we want you guys to feel like you're a community. And so that was August. And I've never got closer to a group of people so fast in my entire life, to when in December, I actually had to leave an on-grounds weekend pretty suddenly due to a family emergency. And I didn't get the word out fast enough to like my cohort that I had, like, it was leaving very early Sunday morning. And the response was insane. Like I had text messages, missed calls, voicemails, emails from all of my classmates, like, hey, are you okay? Where are you? No one can find you. We're just worried about you. To once like I explained the situation and why I had to miss, I think I across all communication channels, my phone exploded with people just giving me well wishes and just asking if I was okay. The professors just asking if I was okay. I know. And I don't think I've ever been part of such a close, caring community so fast in my life. And it all of that really started at LR1 for me.
Annette, a new thing that when you look back on this year, or my gosh, eight months ish, that you're really proud of and said, gosh, I'm glad we were able to help with that or have an impact there.
Yeah, I actually, as Alex was telling the story, I was thinking about how, like, we didn't know where he was, and like the concern was so genuine. we were like, oh no, we were so glad that we found you. Well, you just contacted us, but
I was found. You guys found me on the plane.
I was never more relieved. Yeah, I think that, like, if I'm looking back holistically, it kind of goes back to the people, and it goes back to the friendships and relationships that we've established and the ties and the stories. You know, I will say that it's really recent, but I just got back from Spain. I was on the term abroad, and you know, for folks that might not be familiar with how this works yet or haven't looked in the program that in-depthly, it's, you know, an opportunity for you for Sunday to Sunday to go to a country with 35 of your closest friends in the program and learn together. And that was probably the closest experience I've had to what Alex was saying. We, you know, we call it LR1, that immersive Charlottesville experience, the beginning. You know, so I kind of got to have that immersive week-long experience again. And my gosh, I have to say, like, there were a couple folks that I went up to and I'm like, we haven't talked yet. It's so nice to like re-meet you, you know, from the beginning of the program, because people get so busy and you get to have these talks in like a beautiful, you know, scenic, you know, Spanish countryside and have a glass of wine and like re-meet people that you maybe talked to in the beginning, but your learning teams, like maybe you got busy. So it was kind of like connecting 2.0. And so I've been telling, you know, folks, like I really just got back, but as soon as I got back, I started texting people like, oh my God, like, I'm so happy for you that you're going to Germany soon or whatever term. I felt like it was that same immersive experience, but even more so because it was a small group. And it was so lovely to connect with all these people in a new place.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And it's been so much fun to be able to host. We do these, I guess, essentially monthly overview webinars. We say, this is kind of how the program works. And here are the different constituent parts of the program and what they mean. And this is your general schedule. For 2 years or so, we had to say, well, there are all these things called global residencies and they're week-long trips. And we have these grand plans to travel the world, but that's really hard to do right now. And this fall, we had a couple groups of students go to Europe. We had a group go to Finland and Estonia. That was one trip. And we had another group go to Germany. And then most recently, Annette, you and some of your classmates who were also members of the class of 2022 who traveled. And we had a group of students go to Spain. I think actually a couple of groups go to Spain across the two classes. And then there was also a group of 2022s who went to Italy. And I will tell you, it is not always easy to be the admissions person. Sharing all these exciting trips and seeing all the pictures on LinkedIn and being like, I wonder, how do I get on this Italy global residency? You know,
Welcome, Brett. You're always welcome.
I got to go to Brazil. That was still one of the high water marks of my Darden tenure. I loved it so much. It was fantastic to be there with all of our students and with Lottie Carr, who is like friend of the podcast and has traveled all over the world. Her country count has got to be, really, honestly, it's well up there. I think it has to be pushing 70 or 80 at this point. She's been all over the world. And so you're in good hands when you travel, let's put it that way. And these are nice trips and incredible trips. And to your point, Annette, it's rare. You kind of get out of your bubble. You get out into the world. You have that kind of disconnection that invariably happens, you know, from your everyday life when you're in a different time zone, in a different part of the world. You're navigating maybe an unfamiliar language, unfamiliar city, together as a group, and you know, a lot of connecting happens during that week. So Couple questions as we wrap up here. First, Annette, what are you looking forward to in the months to come? I mean, y'all are almost through your first year of the program. I mean, just a few more months here.
You know, I think that the first few quarters, understandably, you're trying to really get a schema for the program under your belt. Where do I go for this? How do I, well, at least me, especially me, I don't know, maybe this is just a net thing, but you're like, how do I access this file? Where do I go for this? Who do I call for a tech issue? you know, just like, and like, what books do I need? How many computers do I need? And there's like a lot of logistics to like maneuver. And then, you know, you kind of get to a place, you're like, all right, like I have like a schema, I understand how things work, I know how the schedule works, and you just get into a rhythm. And I think that for me, it's nice now that I know at least the names of my classmates, I have that schema, I understand how everything works. And now you can kind of spread your wings a bit and you can start to choose what classes a little bit. You feel more comfortable and confident asking questions with your professor, your classmates. I think everything shifts like to the next level going into the spring. And I'm kind of excited to see what that looks like.
And that's great. And I think that's not just an Annette thing. I think that's everybody. We always hear from students that it takes about 2 to 3 quarters, about 6 months or so, to really start to feel settled, like you got your sea legs. Because, you know, you're taking classes, it's a new environment, you're probably back in school for the first time in a little while for many of our students. But for folks who are wondering, one computer is generally enough. A laptop will get you through this program. I know how many computers do you need? We'll just say one. I'm going to go out on a limb. I'm going to say this here in the podcast. It's just one should be all right. So Alex, how about you? What are you looking forward to in the months to come?
It's pretty similar to Annette, actually. Right after Q5, we really dive into elective season. So you get to really choose your journey at Darden FDA. So I will say, like we said, mentioned earlier, we're in Q4 right now. Q5 is on the horizon very quickly. You'll be surprised how quick the quarters go once you're in the program. I can't even fathom that it's been 8 months in this program already. I think in LL1, we're like, oh, we have 23 months. And now a third of it is gone. And I don't understand how, but that's a whole nother conversation we can have another day. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to like being able to dive into some of the topics that I've been really interested in since I kind of started business school. And then obviously, as we've gone through some of these core classes, now I'm like, oh, I think I might actually enjoy a class in finance or another class in economics more than I thought of before. So I'm definitely looking forward to exploring our elective catalog and going from there.
I think you make a great point about the swiftness of the program. And, you know, I think maybe our listeners are a little surprised to hear the emphasis on like Q4, Q5, this kind of thing, but you really will come to measure your time in this program in these 2 month increments, because every couple of months you're getting new classes. It creates this kind of rhythm to things and this kind of pacing of like, all right, you go through these two quarters, you finish these classes, you get new classes. There's not a lot of downtime. You're not really sitting around kind of like thinking about what's next. I wonder what I'll have to do here. So,
and I just want to throw a shout out to the folks with families, because they do a tremendous job of balancing. So I will say, I do not have children. I just have dogs. They are my kids. And I you know, it's difficult, but there are some folks in the program that are actively, you know, having children or had children at the start of the program. And they do a fantastic job of balancing. And I applaud many of our classmates for that.
No, Alex, you're so right. I have 3 houseplants. So like, yeah, every time I hear about my classmates juggling all the logistics with their kids, they are they get the true shout out there. And they do so well. They do phenomenal. So
there's this interesting point that sometimes these official members of the Full Plate Club, right? People who've got so many things competing for their time, will sometimes share here on the podcast is, you know, you got the time that you have, right? You know, you're trying to fit this into an already full life, and there's no perfect time. But once you know this is my time to do school, and you don't have an unlimited amount of time, it makes you work really efficiently and be really focused, because you don't have that luxury of like, you know, there's this project management idea sometimes that like a time, like a task will expand the amount of time that it's allotted. You know, occasionally, you know, if you say something's going to take 5 days, it might take 5 days. Could you do it faster than that? Maybe. And so it is not a perfect rule, but sometimes if you say, I have all day to do this reading, you're going to do it all day. If you give yourself 2 or 3 hours, you got to get it done. You'll find a way to get through it. And I hear that a lot from our students, particularly those who have families and have all these other commitments sort of vying for their time. But that's a skill as much as anything else. It takes a while to get there. You probably won't be there when you start in Q1, but you will get there is the point. So last question. Thank you all for being here. It's been such a pleasure catching up with you on this Friday afternoon. We always ask the same last question of our guests. Annette, I'll come to you first. A piece of advice for our listeners here.
Just be yourself. I think that what is so great about Darden is the folks that are in the program are really comfortable with who they are, their unique backgrounds, what they've done. So really the same way in life, it's just good to be yourself and be comfortable with that, flaws and all. You know, there's no perfect person in the program. We all have our imperfections, and that's what makes the community so special. So don't be afraid when you're applying, just to, you know, really be you and be okay with that.
Appreciate that point. It resonates with so much. We actually just shared on the Experience Darden podcast an interview with Christian Robinson, my admissions colleague, and he was saying the exact same thing. Be yourself through this process, because, you know, so often people are trying to be some, I guess, edited version of themselves that they imagine the admissions committee wants to see or hear or read about, and that's not true. We want to get to know the real you, and hopefully we kind of made that point pretty clear through these podcasts where we say, like, look, you're going to bring all of this with you to the classroom and outside of the classroom. So, Alex, a word of advice for our listeners?
Annette has such a good one. That's hard to come up with a second one. But what I'll say is lean in. Lean into, it's going to be difficult. And it's going to be a lot of tough times, a lot of tough nights. I mean, even through the application process, it's not easy. But I do promise you, it will be one of the most rewarding experiences of your life, because it has been for me, and it's only been, like Brett mentioned, it's only been a third of the program for us.
Well, Alex and Annette, hopefully our listeners know how much I enjoy spending time with you. I think that has probably come through on this podcast. It took us, like, heck, even 15 minutes to start the recording. We were having so much fun hanging out. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Brett. Really appreciate it.
And that was my interview with Annette Stock and Alex Morita, two first-year students in our Executive MBA class of 2023. As always, if you have any comments, suggestions, requests, anything you'd like for us to cover here on the podcast, we're all ears. We can be reached at exec, that's EXEC, MBA at darden.virginia.edu. Until next time, stay safe, be well, and thanks for listening.